Okay, it does feel right. And it's so much better when we record in person because press that little button and then off we go and we're rolling. And we even have a little video going.
First time since episode one
You know
in
what?
person.
And it feels very right to do it like this. I feel like you and I should potentially have a podcast studio where we record all of them in person. I don't know if you can move to Hawaii.
That would be tough.
Okay.
You're gonna have to talk to Prof. You're gonna have to talk to Prof on that one. But I like being near you, Robert.
I like it too. It feels
yeah,
right.
It does. It does. It certainly does.
So big episode today. Big episode today. We're leading up to Major League Pickleball. We've got a lot of interesting stuff from this past weekend with Lobgate,
of
with
course.
Karen Waters. You like that? I dropped that early on.
Oh my!
You like that's just
here
a
we
little...
go. Here we go.
Where do we start?
I don't see how.
Let's just talk about where we are.
Okay. Yes. No. We are in just outside of Dayton, Ohio,
Ohio.
A gosh darn compound.
Yeah, this is a compound.
Yeah,
in a state.
It's got to be freaking 15,000 square feet. They got a giant barn with two courts, hosted by Jessica and Mike Betancourt for these few days before MLP to get some touches in. I absolutely need them. I know you do as well.
Yes.
So happy to be here for sure.
Important to touch balls before you play.
Yes, no doubt.
And yeah, Stan the Betancourts, lovely people, been an amazing host. There's a tunnel from this room that we're sitting in, a tunnel underground that leads to a gigantic barn that has two pickleball courts. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's
tunnels
it's,
are fun.
It's what I want, and
in your compound,
and I'm very far from getting it. But it's really what I want, Rob. I mean, why you don't need to leave a place like I don't like I have a small bubble. I would rather my bubble just be my house and my compound, and so maybe we'll get there one day.
I believe in it.
You hear that, Prof? Compound.
Yeah, work harder, Prof.
That was good.
Thank you. I thought you'd appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, Rob, I don't see how we don't – I mean, we obviously have that MLP preview, but how do we not talk about Kim Clijsters and Tom Brady, who are just another couple big names joining that MLP family of ownership, just crazy, crazy big-time athletes. I mean, I honestly can't think of two – more popular players in the sports world to jump on that ownership part of MLP, so it's super exciting.
It's wild. You know, I know Brooks was talking about like, oh, you know, we're not going to have any announcements like, you know, the size of LeBron, but dude, I think Tom Brady's just damn near about equivalent to LeBron.
I don't see how, and you know, no chump whatsoever in the racket sport world, Kim Clijsters, former number one, six major titles, number one in singles and in doubles.
Which is unheard of in
right,
tennis.
Exactly. So four major titles on the singles, two major titles on the doubles. So just a phenomenal athlete in her own right. So it's crazy.
Yeah,
it literally is crazy.
And I think when, you know, a big topic nowadays is kind of a tennis versus pickleball world, right? So to have a former number one in the world tennis player, especially on the women's side, which is really cool to have, you know, a female-led ownership, is awesome. But to legitimize pickleball through tennis is important.
I mean, it's just as that person who maybe has a little pushback with it, or is that, you know, that tennis purist. When you hear these names, you can't ignore it. We're talking John Isner, Kim Clijsters. We're talking big time names in the
Sam
sport.
Sam Querrey.
You got a former Noah Rubin, a former junior Wimbledon champion, saying that he's gonna end his tennis career and go for pickleball. I mean, this is real stuff. You have to take notice, whether you have not wanted to previously.
You have to. Yep, it's changing fast too. This stuff's happening quick. I mean, coming into the sport for me, basically in 2020, from what it was then, basically when both the APP and the PPA were just starting in beginning of 2020, to what it is now is wild.
Yeah, no, it really is. And if you really think about it, kind of with that broad scope, looking back on it, the quickness that this has happened is absolutely insane. I even had an old friend who's very successful in the oil and gas business. Give me a call about possibly purchasing a team, and he has some, you know, usually some of those more wealthy people. They kind of run in the same circles, do the philanthropy together and things like that. And he had a couple guys that had some inside connections to some people that are on this level. Yeah. And it just kind of, I was like, oh, I heard about this MLP thing. I got a guy researching it to see what the deal is, yeah, if I might want to invest. So it's crazy times. And it might slow down at some point, but I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon, Robert.
Yeah, no, and it's crazy because just having money is not enough to get one of these teams now.
Oh, no.
Like, you have to also bring either crazy celebrity or crazy influence. Like, you know, I know the Betancourts were talking about getting a team, you know, maybe this past year, and now it's like, you know, can we still get in there? It's like, are you LeBron?
Yeah.
Are you Tom Brady?
Yeah. Who's on your team? Yeah. Yeah. Who's on your ownership team?
Do you have 20 million followers you're bringing with you?
Right. Right.
You know, and it's a big deal.
And you know, I don't know the exact specifics of the early on MLP and who wanted a team and whatever, but it was kind of, yeah, I think there was plenty of people that wanted one, but you just came up with a little cash. Maybe, yep, you had two or three people and you bought one. And, you know, just 2 years later, less than 2 years later, the money is almost irrelevant now. Yeah. And you have to have something that's going to bring eyes to the league. And, yeah. I mean, that's just such a quick transition from the beginning to where we are. So,
and I'll be curious to see, you know, would these big names, obviously we already had big names and big influence in MLP even prior to the announcement of LeBron's investment group, as well as Tom Brady and Kim Clijsters. It'll be interesting for me to see how much of a push the ownership groups actually make into Major League Pickleball, because I think that's one gap that's existed is you have these names like Gary Vaynerchuk and Brené Brown and James Blake and all these people. And James does an amazing job tweeting about MLP and pickleball and, you know, trying to also bridge that gap between tennis and pickleball and legitimize it. And it'll be curious I'm very curious to see how it plays out over the next year in terms of getting these owners more involved and pushing the league and pushing the sport even more than they have. Because at this point, I don't think there's been a huge push in terms of the ownership group making that push to really spread it to their audiences.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, some of the owners are a little more involved than some of the other ones, and yep, it'll be cool to see if, you know, they get more involved, come to all the events, maybe even have, you know, some setups in between tournaments to possibly practice and make it a little bit more official. I mean,
yeah,
this upcoming tournament is the fourth MLP. I mean, yeah, that's it. It's the fourth MLP. That's it. So, yeah, and I think you're exactly right. I mean, the platforms these guys have are obviously absolutely ridiculous. So, you know, I mean, we can some people, just regular pickleball people in the community can do some things. But, I mean, you put a paddle in LeBron's hand and he does one tweet and that, yeah, reaches 100,000 times more people, yeah, than someone that's just a pickleball player. So,
got to give a shout out to, and just in terms of talking about owners and who's involved, got to get a shout out to the Jackrabbits owner, your team's owner, Richie.
Yeah.
And also my first team owner for BLQK. Was it last? Just last year?
Yeah, it was last year.
It's weird, but I've always said, like, he does such a great job in terms of fostering a good team environment. Always gets a big house, an Airbnb for the teams, which is really important. Like, that's what made it so fun, you know, is being in a big Airbnb with your team and cooking meals together and just connecting. And I think, you know, the more we have owners kind of take ownership of that kind of responsibility and doing that for the players, it's just going to make the league and everything so much more special. So big shout out to Richie, because he's done an amazing job being a great team owner and creating that environment to where it's really, really fun to be a player.
No, definitely. And you know, that's important stuff. And we've talked about on previous podcasts about meeting in between the tournaments, having some team practices, yeah, having that team environment. I mean, I just watched a great documentary, The Redeem Team, on Netflix, and it was basically a bunch of superstars that lost, as basketball became more of a worldwide sport, they lost in the Olympics because it was just a bunch of superstars that met 2 days before the tournament and played, yeah, and then they had a whole team atmosphere with the new team. Coach K was the coach, and they had that camaraderie and that friendship and those practices in between, and that's what took them to the next level. So I totally see MLP doing the same thing as it gets bigger and bigger.
Yep. I hope so, because that's what makes it fun.
Oh, definitely. So it's exciting times. it's great to see all this happen right when I'm going to be irrelevant as a player. But
our practice session yesterday, Adam goes, well, this solidified my retirement.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we had a practice session with Gabe Tardio and Georgia Johnson, and, you know, they're just hitting the ball harder than me and, you know, lighting me up left and right. I'm, you know, hitting head-high blocks from the midcourt. I'm just like, dang, man, that commentary sounds really good next year.
Yeah, Adam's available for hire. Any commentary in the pickleball world, you hire this guy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, yeah, it's just – it doesn't – it's just great, though. It's to see the growth, and I don't really have anything else to say about it besides it's fantastic.
We'll go into more MLP kind of matchups previews for this coming Friday, which is kind of the first day of pool play. Got all the teams matchups lined up. We'll chat and go into kind of some analysis and previews of what that might look like going into day one. But before we get there, we had a big weekend at the Vegas Championships, the PPA Vegas Championships. So let's jump into that a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So actually, Rob, this was I watched pretty much everything, and I'll full disclosure.
I
had a slight beer buzz through a lot of the matches, and
an IPA.
IPA, of course.
Of course,
IPA, and you know, actually had some fun with some of the chat junkies.
Okay, just so you guys know, Adam Stone is very, very, very hyped on the live stream chat.
Oh, it's so funny. So I obviously watch a ton of the matches, but I never really got on chat much before.
Yeah.
But I had some fun interacting with some people on chat.
And there's some characters.
You guys say some really hilarious stuff, and I tell you what, those guys know a lot.
They know a lot of what's going on.
So
I'll hop in there occasionally and be like, oh, they know a lot about my personal life.
Yeah.
How about that?
For sure. So it was enjoyed watching the matches as always. I love yelling at the TV occasionally. Yep. You know, it's good times. But yes, there was a lot going on. And
we talked about that 75-player singles draw, and what they ended up doing was a play-in, right? Like a qualifier, basically. Early morning, I think they started at 7:30, singles day. And I don't know what they whittled it down to, but they...
I believe it was a 32 draw. Is that no?
Bigger,
no.
I think.
So they had 16. They had 16 come over from that pool.
Yeah.
That played
it. I think it was a 64 draw.
So they slid them in. So they had it set up, and then they had the 16 players coming from that play-in bracket, and then they slotted them in the draw, and then started the draw at whatever 9 or 10. Yeah, so that's great. I mean, we've gone on a couple of rants with that. It might be a little outdated to rant on that, but to see an actual change happen,
yeah, it's great.
Is good, and I think that's just what's going to have to happen moving forward.
Yeah, you couldn't start that off with a 128 person draw for a one day event,
right?
Not possible.
So
I like how they handle that.
Yeah, definitely. And
if I'm paying an entry fee, whatever it is, $100+ to play singles, and then I'm in a quality draw playing games to 15 and I don't know necessarily if I feel like I'm getting my money's worth, but hey, that's on them to decide if they want to shoot for a pro bracket or not, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think with it being so big and them already having a set bracket and then the play in, you know, I don't think it really matters. It's just, are those people willing to do that?
Do you want to pay?
Right. So. So I do think maybe since it was their first time to do it, they might have delayed the bracket and had some gaps, because it was a long day in almost all the events in PPA Vegas. And I've seen a couple rants on amateur stuff. You know, we're talking about
didn't sound like it went well.
Yeah, and kind of forgetting to start the bracket, and then big gaps in between matches. And of course these things happen. It's hard to run it perfectly smooth, but that was a long day out there for some of the pros. I think J-Dub and Deckel on Saturday night finished at 9:30 p.m.
Yeah.
With J-Dub having two finals the next day.
And we're talking about like an 8 a.m. start, right? Was it 8 a.m. start?
It was 10 a.m.
Okay.
I think it was 10 a.m. But he was the first match in mixed, and then he was the last match in singles.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's tough stuff, 9:30.
It's a long day.
It's Vegas, so I'm sure there's restaurants open. But some of these tournament spots, you get done at 9:30, you might have to eat Wendy's or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, which, no problem for you.
Yeah, no problem. Not a problem. I love a nice spicy chicken sandwich, I'll tell you what right now. Let's get into a couple of the brackets.
Yeah.
A couple of the things that happened. So First off, why don't we just start off with the men's doubles? So kind of had that rivalry brewing, which is really, really cool. Yeah. Some of the earlier matches in the bracket, Dylan Frazier and Zane Navratil with a very close match in the quarterfinals with the Johns brothers, 12-10 in the third, and I believe they had a solid lead in that third game of something around the 9-4, 9-5 is what I heard. I did not see that, though. We saw a little bit of the match footage from Bad Pickleball.
Yeah.
So, because I think some of the outer courts are the best matches.
Oh, we always talk about that.
Yeah, always talk about that.
I wish we could see more of the first, second, kind of third round matchups because those are the most intriguing typically.
For sure. And so I believe that is Johnny Knack, Bad Pickleball, who does a lot of the outer courts. So if you guys want to check that out for some of those good outer court matches, you should definitely do so. And not only did the Johns brothers have a tight one, in the round of 16, Matt Wright and Riley Newman had a very close match with the singles boys, and maybe we can't call them the singles boys anymore if they're putting Matt and Riley to a third game. I believe it was 6 or 7 in that third game, and a very, very tight first game that Matt and Riley won as well. So,
that's with Staxrud and Ignatowicz.
Yo, did I not say their names? Yes.
You said the singles boys.
The singles boys,
Staxrud. How disrespectful. Sorry, James. Sorry, Fed.
Sorry, guys. We got to see our rivalry in the finals, but it was pretty close to not happening. So,
yeah, no, it's true. And, yeah, I mean, just to kind of go into, we watched through Bad Pickleball, they had the stream up for the James-Fed match with Matt and Riley, and just watching that, like we talked about this, is like it's the most I've seen. Well, it's not like they're playing very aggressive, mm-hmm. Matt and Riley. They're uh-huh. speeding up a lot of balls off the bounce. In that particular matchup, James and Fed countered very well. Mm-hmm. I think they like the speed, they like pace, they're used to it. Singles, we talked about it. If it's very boring pickleball, just to dink to one spot, mm-hmm. but Matt and Riley can dink all day, right? And not make a ton of errors. So if they played that back and they just dinked the whole time, didn't speed up, let James and Fed speed up at them, world class hands, world class countering, mm-hmm. it would have been probably a 3-3, 4-4, something like that.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's boring to play boring pickleball, but it's effective.
That certainly is effective. So, my favorite line: it's a game of errors, not a game of winners, Robert.
I like that.
But yeah, I mean, who knows what really would have happened? But I think that is exactly right. They weren't really willing to dink, and James has some heavy hands over there.
He does. So, we were talking about that.
Yeah,
too.
He's got that nice extension on the backhand, and that ball comes off his paddle with a lot of oomph. So, a tight one there. I think they played a little bit more conservative later on, and that served them well. But let's get to the finals. Crazy first two games.
Yeah, looks like it was going to be a steamroll.
Yeah, I believe it was 2-2 the first two games with Riley and Matt just firing away. Matt looking really comfortable committing to that right side roll, sliding over with the backhand that he has that is just so effective. And, of course, Riley with that pancake in the middle. So it was working really well for them. And it's hard to fault them for it because it was working so well, but they did continue to push that pressure.
Yeah.
Ben and Colin handled it much better, and so maybe they held on to that all-out barrage a little too long in games 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Lost those, but were able to come back in game 5. So really can't fault them for that aggressive style after it's worked so well for them.
Yeah, it's hard to make that adjustment mid-match, and especially when it was so effective in the first two games,
right?
11-2. You're gonna keep going.
Yeah. Lots of people love talking about stale matchups that we see all the time, but when you have a rivalry like this and there's real back and forth, seeing this same matchup, I think is pretty exciting. Not just a, oh, here we go again type deal. So that's great. Oh, I wanted to give a nice shout out too. I haven't seen him get a really solid win in a while. So my boy Jeff Warnick had
a really
solid win in the second or the third round with Wes Burrows.
Yep.
So shout out to you, Jeff. We're gonna get you on the pod, talk about some old times one of these days, bud. And
who do they take down?
Dawson and Leung.
That's a good win.
Dawson and Leung, and that is absolutely a good win. So shout out to you, Jeff. Let's move over. Anything else to say about that men's bracket, Robert?
Men's bracket. No.
All right. I like it. Yeah. So just touch on a few.
Well, we talked about it before. Just in terms of the rivalry with Matt Riley and the Johns, while it was hot in Vegas, the ball still flies.
Sure.
So I think we're starting to see fast conditions favors Matt and Riley. Slower conditions favors the Johns because they can get more into the controlling the dink rallies, mm-hmm. controlling the points a little bit more.
Algorithm.
A little bit more chaos when the ball is flying and mm-hmm. Matt can pull the trigger on those forehands off the bounce and then slide into that backhand. Mm-hmm. Riley pinches middle and looks for the pancake. Like that's just... Fast conditions is going to favor Matt and Riley. So, you know, if you're looking at Vegas odds, I think, you know, those locations like Utah, Vegas, Palm Desert, those kind of places are going to favor Matt and Riley. And, you know, the places like Florida and the slower conditions is going to favor the Johns.
Yeah. And I would really love to see some numbers on players' records in these conditions because I think it's a huge deal. Some people are super comfortable with that softball in Florida. Some people play at altitude at Salt Lake City with thin air also. So it's really important and it's so different and you can see it in the types of points that people are playing. So I have no doubt that there's a bunch of players out there that excel in certain conditions and struggle in others. I obviously don't have the data with me, but I would love to see some of that.
And I think as pickleball continues to progress, especially the pro game, like we're starting to see more data and analytics and statistics. And I know there's a group that was posting some stuff on Twitter that's going to be at MLP. They did some stats for MLP last. I think it was probably not my favorite look at statistics. I think they had like kill shots. It almost felt like volleyball in a way.
Right, right.
You know, like you said, pickleball is not a game of winners. So kill shots, I think, matters very little.
For sure.
But as pickleball continues to progress, we're going to see really interesting analytics. And mm-hmm. I think there's just for all you entrepreneurs out there, there's massive opportunity to get really good, provide really good statistics and analytics in pickleball because there's not much right now.
Yeah. And I think it's unbelievably important because I think it's very easy to think something's working or and it actually might not be working as well as you think and vice versa.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a lot of that going on. I hit this amazing shot to this area, but it kind of gets lost in translation, those three that I missed. So
yeah.
I think just seeing the numbers and knowing, oh, when I'm here and I'm going to this spot or I'm up against this player, these things are working, they're not working. And it's just hard to compute all that and kind of compartmentalize it in your head with these situations. And
yep.
If you had some data, it would be really cool.
You know what I still want to see is like the, you know, in golf when they have like the ball tracker,
yes.
the tail,
uh-huh.
I still want to see that in pickleball.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I think, wouldn't it like off little attacks and even like drives where you're actually seeing Andy Roddick famously said on Twitter that there's no spin in pickleball.
Uh-huh.
I was like, okay, Andy. But like, meanwhile, Pat Smith's hitting a forehand drive that goes over my head and lands in.
Yeah, right.
There's a little spin in pickleball.
Yeah, right. I remember Andy's pretty funny. I remember doing the thing with Agassi with him like 4 years ago. And he, you know, didn't play great or missed a couple shots or something. He's walking back to the baseline. He goes, these people just who are no good at tennis just create games to be good at. And I was just like, Andy.
Yeah. That's great.
So it was pretty funny. The spin is getting more and more, it seems like, every day. So, absolutely. Okay, women's. We had Paris Todd and Anna Bright with a fantastic run, beating
Adam, you're a hot commodity.
Yeah, I guess so.
El Paso, Texas.
El Paso, Texas, beating Lucy and Callie 12-10 in the third. Really, really good match.
Is that the semifinal?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was to get there. And then we also had they beat Catherine and Leia as well pretty handily in a nice fiery match with
– Bro, your Anna Bright number three picks.
I know.
Holding up pretty well.
Holding up. I got it. I know. That was slightly controversial. Not as controversial as the Coop pick. But but yes, Anna Bright, you can just see little tweaks in her game. A few less bad decisions, a little bit more consistency on the soft stuff, and obviously she has the firepower.
Yep.
So I think...
two championship Sundays with two different partners, pretty impressive.
Oh, absolutely. Let's see. Irvin and Newman losing handily to the Waters, and they ended up, I believe, losing to Catherine and Leia in the back draw.
Mm-hmm.
The Waters win in three in that championship Sunday. Some really high quality points, close games, even though they did win in three. I think maybe just a little bit Paris got
exploited a little bit,
exposed a little bit in some of those situations. But I mean, she's, I mean, how can you falter? I mean, she's in a championship Sunday playing for a year or less. But I do think that might have been the difference. Maybe she played a little bit cleaner. They could have forced a game four or a game five.
Oh, honestly, they were up relatively big in every game. Yeah, they just weren't able to close. So I think we're just looking at, you know, in that respect, it's typically just a little bit of a lack of experience and being in those big moments. So I think the more she's in those situations, the more solid she's going to be. So.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah, not a knock at all. I think she moves incredibly well laterally in singles and possibly just not as comfortable yet moving forward. And I think with those big strokes and those big shots, as she gets more comfortable doing that and a few other things, watch out. You know, watch out. So. So a lot of fun watching the women's the women's stuff. Oh, and that, I was going to mention that, so I got crossed up. I couldn't read my own writing there. But the Todd Bright and the Lucy Calley, I mean, that's a lot of ladies like to yell on that court. And there's a lot of fist pumping and whatever else. Yes, so there's a lot of fire on that court. And, you know, that's just fun. I enjoy that. And you know, obviously there's always going to be talk about what's too far, but to see some fire and see some, you know, non-robots out there just going through the motions is cool. Everyone has their own style, but, you know, fire's cool. I don't mind it at all.
No, I mean, come on. Like, we need personality in this game. We talk about it. Like, the more firepower, the more fiery they are, the better it is.
Right. Yes, absolutely. So,
you want people to hate you and love you. you don't want everybody just to be like, meh about you.
Yeah.
You
right. No.
People to either hate you or love you.
I hear you. Mixed doubles. We had Callie Smith, AJ Kohler, taking, Ben and Anna Lee to three games in the quarters, unable to seal the deal. Jay and Jesse lose fairly badly to Bright and Loom.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact scores, but it was pretty routine, right, with their consistency. But, you know, Loom and Bright have some firepower, so I guess at the same token, it's not terribly surprising. Waters and McGuffin. Lee Waters had a nice run in the back draw, ended up getting in the mix to, I'm not sure if it was the 5-6 spot or possibly the 4 spot. And the Newmans run through the back draw for bronze. Yep. Didn't see anything really too close.
Yeah.
A lot of 15-8s and things like that on their run to capture that bronze. Anything you remember about mixed?
Mixed is probably the one I watched the least.
The least, yeah. Yeah, gotcha. So women's singles, we had Irina beating Davidze 1-8, which I think is a little surprising.
That was a big surprise.
Davidze's been doing really well lately, great ground strokes, and, you know, old school. Old school Irina getting a very nice win there, 1-8.
Yeah, it's a great win.
Catherine beats Paris, which obviously isn't surprising, but I think on paper a lot of people would have gave Paris the edge for sure.
Yeah.
And then Davidze came back through and ended up getting the bronze. So we had obviously Anna Lee Waters just too good, and winning gold. Catherine with a nice job. I think it's been a little while since she's had a singles championship Sunday. Yep. So nice job by her, but. You know, obviously, Anna Lee just too much there. Men's singles, we had Fed beating Tyson 12-10 in the third. And
it had to be a battle. Every game was tied, too.
It wasn't on the stream. I would have really liked to see that one. That was in the quarterfinals. We had, let's see, Fed. Yes, we had Fed. Wait. Oh, JW had a smooth ride to the finals. He beat Dylan 8-6 and then beat Fed 5-4.
Yeah.
Which is very surprising. I know JW's beat Fed a bunch early on, but the ones have been very tight lately, and with Fed getting a couple of those. So to win 5-4, pretty impressive for JW.
Absolutely.
James and Zane had to play fairly early, and they were in the bottom half, and you know, ended, neither one had a very deep run.
Zane took that one, and then lost to Jocelyn in the next round.
I believe that is correct, yes. And we had Dylan running through and getting a bronze. You know, I got to say, Dylan's my favorite player right now.
Very versatile.
Very versatile. I love me some baby Dill. And then we also had something to talk about here. We had Tyler Loom, Tyson, Zane Navratil, AJ Kohler, and Ryan Sherry pulling out
of the back
after they won their main draw match and not playing a single match in the back draw.
And why wouldn't you?
There's no
incentive to play the back.
There's $500 bonus just for getting bronze.
Yeah.
You're winning a very small amount of money per match in the back draw, and there's not a lot of points either.
No.
So these guys have, this was the first day. They have two more events, possibly some championship Sunday. It makes no sense whatsoever.
To kill yourself in the back to hopefully get a $500 bonus for bronze.
Exactly. So I feel like there needs to be a switch there to not have any incentive and have your top players just pulling out of a draw. I just can't imagine that's a great situation.
No. But you can't fault the players, because why risk beating up your body or getting hurt, grinding through these backdraw matches for not a lot of upside? I don't know if it's actually $500 for that, for the Vegas PPA Championships, but it's a very low amount, relatively speaking, to the amount of work you have to put in.
Sure.
How long of a day it would be.
Sure.
So, but Baby Dill.
Yeah.
He didn't care.
Yeah. Baby Dill.
I mean, even more respect for him.
Dude, that's my guy, man.
I
like me some Baby Dill. We got to get him on the pod.
Oh, he will be on the pod. Baby Dill, you're coming.
Yeah, I've been chatting with Cindy,
okay,
his mother. We got some nice info. She's a lovely lady, like the family. So I'm on board with old Baby Dill. So let's touch briefly on the APP, Alabama.
Yeah.
It's a tier two event. We talked many times about how a lot of the APP top players were playing this Vegas event, but still a tournament going on in, how do you say it, Opelika?
Opelika? I think so.
Okay. All right. I believe you. So we had Yardo and Kenny, who I had never really heard. I believe I've seen, I think it's Tito Yardo. I'd seen him on a draw before, but I had never seen him play.
Yeah.
They ended up getting silver, losing in three to Rafa Hewitt and Julian Arnold, and beating Scarpa and Dow, which is a very solid team
That's a good W.
Yeah, that we talked about last. That is
Scarpa and Dow coming off a huge championship win at the Savannah Golf Club.
This Dink for Pink.
Dink for Pink.
Yes. Also, we had Julian capturing gold in singles as well. We had Georgia Johnson and Bobby Oshiro capturing a gold in women's doubles. And it was funny. We had, Radzikowska. So I believe is a former pro tennis player, at some level, and I believe she is in her early 40s, but she won the singles bracket and had a decent run in mixed. So I know it's a little bit thinner field, but there was still plenty of solid players in this field. And I saw something kind of funny in the women's draw. We had Megan Fudge missed her first round, she had to pull out, and then ends up playing the back draw and ends up getting second, so a silver.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen that before, where someone misses their first round and then comes back
through. Must have just been late.
Yeah, I mean, she's got two kids. I mean, there could have been a lot of things that happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was definitely interesting. And also, about that PPA chat, I wanted to mention, so I got in a little back and forth with the gentleman from the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
And I always love some of the old stuff, you know, and he had done some playing with Puppet Master about a decade ago, and we talked about some stuff, and I remember LaVon Major, who his wife Tanya Major also did a lot of pickleball playing back in the day, and we were talking about the Ernie, and so we got a little interesting story here. So there is a player named John Dixon out of the Pacific Northwest, who is actually doing the Ernie before Ernie Perry. So just a little fun fact there, Robert. Just a little.
What's his name?
John Dixon. So maybe we should be calling it the Dixon, not the Ernie. Not as catchy, but just a little fun fact from the roots of the game there. And I always like that stuff. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And if you guys haven't watched some of
the Puppet Master,
I believe it's Pickleball All-Stars on YouTube, but there is just some incredible incredible videos of Puppet Master, you know, beating up on 4-0s and like body bagging 3-5s. Yeah. And of course, there's some good pro play on there as well, but they're really funny and really entertaining. And just some of the stuff that I watched, you know, that first year when I was just obsessed and trying to watch every YouTube video I could. So
some of the best parts of those videos are actually the comment section.
I've never seen that.
Commenting on everybody's comments.
Yes,
good stuff.
Yes, that is. I remember him just destroying Mike Gates in the face at a national.
Just hitting as hard as he could.
Because he used to do the pull back, and then he would do the soft stuff.
Yeah.
And then every now and then he would try to bag you. No attempt to keep it in the court.
Yeah.
And just lit up Mike Gates in the face, who took it like a champ.
You know what that sounds like to me?
What?
Brandon French and James Ignatowicz.
Oh, my God. That was I couldn't believe it. I was commentating that match. Brandon French does a step back and puts it right right on like the collarbone, upper chest area of
Ignatovic,
who also took it like a champ.
Yeah.
Just kind of smiled and said, "Good shot." Brandon French, you know, is
He's
got some things to say, and a lot of times
I like Brandon. Keep doing you. Never stop being you,
yeah,
Brandon.
That's right. So,
well, I got to, just on that note, because we talked about like how James just kind of took that and like didn't get bothered by it. Where
right.
like, if that happened to Colin,
or maybe Kyle,
Colin,
or maybe
Colin,
Kyle,
or Kyle, it would be meltdown city. but James just took it like a champ, and then you know we were watching the James Fed and Matt Riley match, and there was jawing going on, and you know Matt doing Matt things and getting into you know it's probably one of their if not the first time playing Matt and Riley,
right?
One of the first, and you know for a lot of guys it'd be intimidating, Matt starts chirping at you, you kind of back off a little bit,
uh-huh.
and James handled it amazing. Like he, you know, gave it back and
smiled,
yeah. didn't get too bothered by it. So I just thought that was really cool to see in terms of how to handle, you know, when somebody's trying to get under your skin.
Textbook handling of Matt Wright, who the last several times I played him, it's not bothered me, but there was a couple of times at the beginning where I was just like, you know,
I'm going to kill you, Matt. I'm going to kill you.
That's out, or that's the spot. Keep going just muttering something under his breath where you can hear it, you know, where you can hear it. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's just that mental warfare going out there. Some people really frown upon it. And while it can be frustrating and slightly annoying at times, it's just kind of part of the deal.
I think it's great with pickleball because it's so different than tennis where you have so much space between the players,
right?
Like we're all in like,
for
we're
sure.
like within 10 feet of each
yeah,
other.
For
so
sure.
you hear everything, you can jaw a little bit. It's fun.
And Matt's so funny.
He's so good at it.
Yeah, I'll just be like, lean over to Riley, be like, "Hey, let's go there every time, every single time to that spot that we just went to," you know, like right where they can hear it, you know, it's pretty funny. But
we need Matt Wright, because you don't always hear it as just like a viewer. We need Matt Wright mic'd up.
Yeah.
Just like it would be so many good clips of like what he says.
Or we could get Matt Wright mic'd up somehow when he doesn't know he's mic'd up.
Yes.
That would be ideal.
But I don't think Matt would even care. He would
Matt
would be Matt.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. And we're going to play a little, just to finish off here, Robert, about this recap, we're going to play a little good cop, bad cop here.
Okay.
And I will be the good cop as always.
Sure.
Robert, tell me what you think about Lobgate.
How is it possible to be good cop here?
I'll find a way.
Okay. Yeah, I know you will. You're very diplomatic with stuff. But So if you don't know what he's referring to in terms of Lobgate, you've been living under a rock. But I'll just give you a brief recap. So, oftentimes when you play pickleball, the sun is out directly overhead. It's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. The sun will always be there. The sun's always going to rise. It's always going to set.
Fact.
When you play the game, sometimes you have to look into the sun. And Regina Franco Goldberg and Jana Grichkina recognize this playing the waters. And they're like, "Hey, Lee's really struggling seeing the ball when I lob it. Let's lob, because that's how you play sports. You find what somebody's struggling with, and then you do that over and over until they prove that they can handle it."
Mm-hmm.
So, fantastic strategy. And there, yeah, Lee had a meltdown. Lee was just freaking out. And I think one of the comments that she said as she physically got restrained by her 15-year-old daughter was, "You doing this because you can't beat us straight up?" What is straight up? Playing the correct way? Like, there's no correct way to play pickleball.
That's right.
There's no correct way. You can do whatever you want. You can have two people back. There's no set way to play this game.
Well, Robert, I'm going to say one thing as the bad cop, and it'll be just this, and I'll let you continue your rant.
Yeah.
Is I think that there's probably a lot of people that think the waters don't play the game the right way.
Yeah, that's fair.
But that's ridiculous, because
there is
no right way. Continue your rant.
No, thank you. That was a good interjection. It actually was hard for me to compute why she could be upset. I didn't get it. Like, what is she upset about? Because they're lobbing into the sun? What? I still don't get it. Like, it doesn't compute. Like, there's no argument of, is it fair or not? What? That's not even a question that should be posed.
Right.
It's absolutely ludicrous and appalling that somebody could be upset about a strategy that your opponents have of lobbing. What? I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it. And to see that behavior and to see her act like that on court and literally physically get held back by her 15-year-old daughter because she's freaking out so much about getting lobbed and whiffing, you know, figure it out. Like, you're not on that side the whole time. You switch sides in games. So you're not stuck over there. Just problem solve. Mm-hmm. Instead of getting mad at your opponents for doing a certain shot, which is absolute bonkers. Absolute bonkers. Like it was embarrassing to watch. And the crazy part to me is that it sounds like from people that were there is that she continued to rant when she got off court. She didn't feel like what she did was wrong. I get it. In the heat of the moment, you know, you're frustrated. You could say something. You can be upset. But afterwards, you have to reflect and be like, okay, I was out of line. That was bad behavior. That's not how I want to represent myself as a player, as a mom, as a person. But there was none of that. It was off the court and still upset about what your opponents were doing. And to me, it's just appalling. I hated it. I thought it was gross behavior, not the way you should represent yourself or your family or your, you know, anything. So that's my take on it.
Okay. No, that is a hot take. And
I don't think so. I think it's a very vanilla take.
Yeah, very vanilla take. Maybe you're right. Yeah, maybe I misspoke there. So I would actually like to tensions run high. This is a competitive game. You know, you're out there, everyone's putting in work off the court now. So there's a lot riding on a lot of these tournaments. But what I would like to know, Rob, exactly like you mentioned at the end, is if there was some amount of, man, I got frustrated in the moment that I probably went too far. I didn't like the lobs. I think that's a little ridiculous. I wouldn't do that. But if she has had no thoughts of that and has just continued to think that what happened was right and what they did was wrong, that would be interesting to me to see exactly what her take would be on it now.
Well, I think at this point, like if there was any level of personal responsibility, that she would have already put out an Instagram post or a statement or anything apologizing for the behavior, apologizing to Yana, apologizing to Regina. But to my knowledge, there hasn't been anything like that. And, you know, talking about the live stream chat and everything, you know, they won the tournament, but I think she lost a lot of respect in the pickleball community.
For the community. From just kind of from the vibe everyone's had, I don't see how I can disagree with you there. Yeah. So I know it's not the same situation, but I mean, I've been cramping on court multiple times. I've maybe threw up before the match and my opponents knew that. Well, I mean, not going to lob me? Are they not going to, you know, adjust, tweak their strategy? Yeah. Being in good shape is part of the deal for this. Yeah. So if you're struggling, your opponent's going to give you a break or maybe play to your partner more because you're struggling. Absolutely not. It could even be something like crazy wind. Yeah. Or, I mean, the wind's against me. They're attacking everything. They're not dinking once because the wind's against them and they're falling in. I mean, these are just things that you have to battle through.
They're elements of the game.
Yeah.
And you want to exploit those things. You want to play the optimum strategy based on what all the elements are and all the variables that are going into that match. You want to exploit those. And your opponents are trying to exploit the same things.
Exactly.
And whoever does it best and whoever executes best is going to win.
That's sports.
It's sports.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that whole thing just kind of blows my mind still. Like, it doesn't compute. Like, it just doesn't compute.
We see. So, all right. No, that was good. We obviously needed to talk about that very, yeah, very important thing that happened at the tournament this last weekend.
And just as a heads up, we're going to have Yana on.
Yes, yeah, they reached out to us about having Yana on to talk about. Yeah.
We'd love to hear her take on it.
Yeah,
you know?
just let her go. Let her say what she wants to say, yeah. And I think that's great. Awesome, bad cop job there, Rob. And I'm going to do a little good cop now.
Okay.
So I'm going to do my good cop rant on the PPA commentators, the Tennis Channel commentators, weekend. So there was, man, they got blasted hard by the hardcore pickleball community. And I'm just not so sure that they should have.
So it was John Michael Gamble, who's mm-hmm. former high-level pro tennis player.
I think he got to 14.
Yeah, he was very good.
Yeah, I think he got to 14 in the world.
And
yes.
who was the other commentator? I'm not
I don't think he was a tennis guy. He was just a commentary,
yep.
like just a color yep. guy that yep. That doesn't have a big background in tennis.
Clearly hadn't watched a ton of high level pickleball no. and came from the tennis world. Yeah. Probably tennis commentary.
Sure, and there was yeah. you know some rackets instead of paddles. Said there's yep. a couple comments that were a little like, whoa, he doesn't know that. I believe they called stacking. They compared stacking to defensive line stunting, where they come around or whatever.
Yeah.
But let's be clear, what's happening here to the hardcore community? It was a disaster. Obviously, we want. Whoever that they have on there, Morgan, Dave Fleming, someone that knows the game and can give good insight. But this is on Tennis Channel. There is many more tennis players watching than pickleball players. I mean, they have 50 million subscribers or something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know the numbers, but I can't imagine that there weren't a ridiculous amount of newbies that don't know much about it.
Yep.
They have someone that they can recognize from the sport that does a lot of the tennis commentary and Jan Michael Gamble. So overall, I think it was fine. I think it was fine for that audience. As we continue to be on Tennis Channel more and more and more and more players get comfortable with pickleball and know some things, then obviously we probably need a pickleball player and a Tennis yeah. Channel person as we go forward. But for an introduction or their first time on the mic, I think it was okay, and I don't want to have this exact same situation happen 6 months from now or a year from now. But in this exact situation, I'm okay with it. And I think some of the backlash was just a little too heavy for what was happening out there.
Yeah. No, I agree. We talked about that in the moment. And it's like, yeah, no, I think even for me listening to these guys, it's good for like from my perspective, which is very biased, which is very ingrained into the pickleball world and everything that's going on, to hear kind of outsiders that don't know the world and hear what their takes are on certain things and how they see stuff is really important. Like to understand to the market that's coming into pickleball, what are like some of the barriers? What are some of the blocks in terms of them watching it and understanding it and getting into it? So I liked hearing their perspective, and you're right. I think for the new viewer, they need somebody relatable and not somebody that's mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. using very pickleball specific terms where they right. don't understand what that means.
Right. I love Dave Fleming. He's one of my oldest friends in the sport. Big fan of Dave, doing a great job over there on the PPA. But if, you know, there's a unwinding the stack into a Cobra,
yeah.
Bert alert,
yeah.
you know, like
what?
Yeah. The chat, you know, Hey Shay or
yeah.
Odoth or whoever, they know
those
exactly.
Good shout outs. There you go.
Good shout outs.
There you go.
Those guys know what's going on, but some 40-year-old guy who's been playing tennis his whole life and is like, oh, there's pickleball on Tennis Channel. I'll check it out. They don't know what that stuff is.
Yeah.
So I think we need to look at the big picture here. Can't be like this down the line.
Yeah.
But for right now, I think it's okay. And, you know, some of the harsh comments, I get them. I totally get them, but I think it was probably a little overkill.
Yeah, no, agreed. I think it's, you know, we're not the mass market, you know.
Right, totally.
I always look at that with pickleball as like, you know, people that watch pro pickleball is 0.1% of the entire pickleball population that actually plays. And
right.
like, we've got to cater to the mass market so they understand the game and so they can get into it and understand it more and get more ingrained like everybody else is, you know, that watches. So I, no, totally agree. I think that's a great good cop.
All right, so bad cop rant, good cop rant. Now, before we get into MLP action, let's take a look at this PPA roundup, Texas Roundup in Dallas this weekend. So,
okay.
So tell me what happened here. So this wasn't scheduled always. They kind of put yeah. it on the schedule late. I didn't even know that. So
yeah, so I think when MLP announced their dates for the Columbus, Ohio final MLP of the year, the 14th to 16th of October, which mm-hmm. we're mm-hmm. rapidly approaching, PPA put out something, you know, similar to how they did with the Newport and I think the Manhattan Beach, was it Manhattan Beach or LA? Regardless, so MLP scheduling their dates, PPA follows it up, kind of creating an event, mm-hmm. a new unique event that same weekend. Same thing happened with this Frisco, Texas Roundup.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing a big celebrity match, I believe, Thursday night, which is you got Dirk Nowitzki, you mm-hmm. got John Isner, you have Scottie Scheffler, world number one golfer. Who else?
Spieth and Romo. Spieth and Tony
yeah,
Romo.
Yeah, so I mean, we're star-studded, like legit.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous, you know, mostly all Dallas guys, you know, probably connected through Tom. Tom Dundon. So he's getting his buddies together for a exhibition, which I'll watch because it's going to be interesting. And
hell,
I think
yeah,
these guys, you know, this versus like a Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Phelps, like who those guys couldn't play.
Right.
These guys can play.
Right.
Like I watched a couple of clips of them playing points and all super athletic, all good hand eye. Like they're all like decent players. So it'll be actually quite entertaining to watch.
Okay. Reach in the kitchen.
Okay. Reach in the kitchen. I mean, we're talking 6'10 guys.
I mean, Scheffler. Golfer,
he's way bigger.
He's
than
like
I
4 or 5 inches shorter than Dirk or something. I mean, he's like 6'5". I mean, it's crazy. But yeah, I mean, so some of the draws here. So I'll go with the women's first. We have 5 teams signed up for women's, and 5 of the 10 players do not have a 5.0 rating.
Oy,
so
rough.
That's pretty dang thin. And I took a look at the men's field. Yesterday, and it has changed a lot. So I think the PPA was scrambling. I don't know this. I think they were scrambling a little bit, maybe even paid some money to get some players to come in, because several teams have come in, and there's 14 men's teams, but the last 4 or 5, I think there's a couple 4.0 rated players, and it gets pretty thin quick. It turns out that the top 4 or 5 men's teams are pretty solid, but it thins out real quick.
And that's just the contracted teams?
Oh, right, exactly. Yeah. So I didn't see Callen on there, and he popped in at the last minute, so I'm guessing they got him. I think they got Wyatt Stone to come up from the San Antonio, Austin area, and a couple others squeezed in there to kind of round out the roundup.
Yeah, and I know they were I heard from a couple players that they were reaching out trying to get them to show up for the tournament, and lower level pro type players. And offering free entry to the tournament. So, yeah, it sounded like they were scrambling to put together some kind of product, right? But it's like, why don't you just make it the celebrity battle on Thursday
2 days
night?
Or something, or have 2 days of exhibitions or something.
Totally, versus putting together, like scrambling to find players for a pro bracket just seems like it's not going to be a very good product.
Yeah, so that definitely looks thin. Exhibition looks very cool.
No, the exhibition could be epic.
Tournament looks pretty thin. So just wanted to mention that. I guess it feels right. It's time to get in this MLP action, Robert.
Yeah, so we have some new look teams. Mm-hmm. You know, at the fives, we brought on Ben Newell, so that'll be fun. I've never played with him, and you know, indoors plays fast. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of fast pickleball, you know, talk about Julian Arnold, Rafa Hewitt, mm-hmm. those guys that like to drive, like to crash, shake and bake, like it's going to be very prevalent this weekend, just fast conditions.
Yeah, Georgia and Tardio. letting that ball fly yesterday.
They hit the ball pretty hard.
Yeah, they do,
for
sure.
They hit the ball pretty hard.
Definitely going to be interesting with that indoor dynamic. We talked about it a couple other times. So, and we even mentioned the Florida thing, and the indoor outdoor is kind of similar. So,
it matters more than people think.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
it does.
It really does. Like the speed of the ball, the way you can play, the level of, you know, drops with a softer ball versus a harder ball.
Sure.
Like all of that matters so much.
And big time for pros, you know, 3-5s out there. Whatever, you know, it's probably not going to matter. We're just trying to make the ball in. But when you're talking about high-level pros that have all the shots, these conditions can drastically alter the optimal shot selection, for sure.
Yep. Who do you think – so just looking at these teams, who do you think it favors the most? Just going to kind of look through the MLP roster here. We've got
– I mean, the first thing that stands out is possibly BLQK with Rafa Hewitt. You got Paris Todd. Yeah. And who's their other woman? Is that Schneeman?
Irina.
No, it's Irina. Okay, yep. Irina. All right.
So Zane, Rafa, Irina, Paris. I mean, I think it
yeah, with Schneeman, it would be even more than Irina, who's more of a control, kind of feel the ball player.
But even with the Florida Smash, who picked up Schneeman, you have Michelle Esquivel, likes fast pace.
Yes.
J-Dub, who can do both.
Do anything.
Rettenmeier likes to shake and bake. Comes from big tennis background, good hands.
Heavy hands. That new Selkirk.
So I think the Smash lined up pretty well for the fast conditions. BLQK, like you mentioned. even the bus where you have Stratman, Susanna Barr, Eric Lang, Wes Burrows.
Wes Burrows, yep. Wes Burrows.
Wes Burrows likes fast pickleball.
How do you think some of those points were this weekend with Wes Burrows and Jeff Warnick?
Oh, yeah. I want to see some of that.
Yeah, lots of dinking, I'm sure. Right. Yeah, right. But Wes, I mean, he's got a heavy drive, closes well. I mean, that's
very athletic.
That's the best part of his game from the little bit that I've seen of it. So these are big factors and big differences for the two previous ones this year.
Yeah,
so
I even think like with our Newport champions, the Ranchers, like, you know, maybe don't set up best for Jackie Kawamoto. Like,
that's
she
it.
Likes slow conditions, but you have Anna Bright who likes fast, you have DJ who can crush the ball, and you have Ignatowicz who likes fast pace too.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I mean, they're set up for success in this condition, in these conditions as well. Hard eights are going to be tough. You have Georgia Johnson, Sierra Gayton Leach, you have Andre Diaskew and Kyle Yates. Mm-hmm. When you saw what Georgia can do to the ball.
Yeah, she hits it hard. I mean, she does. I mean, I love Gabe Tardio's game, but sorry, Gabe, Georgia hits it harder than you, buddy.
Yeah. I think I told you yesterday, I think, you know, what's Georgia's 15?
Yeah.
I think she's going to be the best woman in the world.
Yeah, mate. The absolute firepower is next level.
I would say Anna Lee's more athletic, moves better,
no doubt.
All of that, but does not have the raw power that Georgia has. Georgia can flatten the ball out. She can hit it hard. She's getting so much better in the midcourt with the soft stuff.
Right.
Didn't miss a ton of dinks yesterday, which typically, like when I played her in the past, you'd get quite a few freebies off mm-hmm. off missed dinks, and mm-hmm. her forehand dink looks solid. So I think we've seen how much she's developed in the last year.
Right.
And the trajectory is pretty significant, and I think it's going to continue that way.
Yeah, definitely. But when that ball goes up above the shoulder, I mean, man, she really hits it. And
yeah.
I mean, this is obviously picking nits with Anna Lee's game, who's just ridiculously
picking nits. I like that.
Is just ridiculously good at everything.
Is that how can you actually say it like that?
You can say whatever you want to, Robert.
Picking nits.
If it feels
I like picking nits.
If it feels right, I'm going to say it. So,
pick nits.
But when that ball goes up high, Anna Lee still kind of strokes it. So
yeah, it's kind of that.
She's still hitting the crap out of the ball.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a great shot. But when it goes up high to Georgia, it is...
It's a laser.
It's a little bit different coming off that paddle. So just another example of just the raw power and the raw upside. And if that, materializes with a little bit better decision-making, watch out.
Soft stuff and the resets and the defensive type.
Yeah, and obviously crazy age-related upside.
Oh, yeah.
15 years old. And of course, Anna Lee has that as well.
Decent practice partner with J-Dub.
Yeah, right. I would say so. And I think that they're going to be playing quite a few tournaments together next year, J-Dub and Georgia. So, watch out for her. The firepower and the offense is definitely there. Clean that up just a little bit, Georgia, and you're already great.
She will.
Yeah, and like I said, you're already great. Take that another step forward. I could totally see it happening very soon.
Yeah, agreed. Let's go into just some of the Friday early round matchups for pool play. Mm-hmm. We can just dig in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think your first match on championship court Friday morning at 8:30.
8:30 against BLQK. Yes.
So we have Jackrabbits, which is your team, and that's Maggie Brasha, Vivian David, you, and Hunter Johnson.
Hunter Johnson, correct. Yes.
Playing, as we mentioned, with BLQK, Irina, Paris, Zane, and Rafa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a tough early round pool play match first thing in the morning.
For sure.
What's it going to take for you guys to get a W there?
Well, maybe we'll just catch them with that because I think on paper we're definitely a bit of the underdog there. So maybe that kind of like that bye isn't always the best thing. Maybe we'll catch them early
a little
bit.
Right,
for sure. Yep. But obviously there's a lot of firepower there, and and they kind of match up well too in terms of. Zane has done a much better job of being solid with the soft stuff, not really missing dinks, and he's got that powerful lefty partner with Rafa Hewitt there over on the right side, and it's very similar with Irina and Paris.
Yep.
So I think that there's no doubt that Paris has more raw power and goes for her shots and releases on the ball more than Irina, who kind of likes to manipulate the ball, roll it, slice it, these kind of things. So we definitely have our work out for us because they can play both styles, I think, and they do mesh together well as a team, as we've seen in some of the previous MLPs. So
Maggie and Viv are good.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, that's what I love about MLP is, like, there's, while you might have some 60-40 favorites, you're not going to have many, like, 70-30 favorites.
I mean, sorry, Hunter, but our girls are better than us. Yeah. So, Maggie's been playing really great in some of these West Coast tournaments. So, if she plays well and Vivian does her thing and Hunter and myself just don't blow it, then I think we got a good squad, a pretty good squad.
And I think, you know, you can have Viv on the right where she's comfortable and Maggie on the left where she's comfortable, which is a much better fit than it was prior, right?
Right. And unfortunately, I've you know, I think I've played Maggie once, maybe twice, and I've never played with her, unfortunately. But she also is, like you said, very comfortable on the left, and I've done that with Prof. Yep. And we're gonna start off regular with me on the left. But if you know,
you have options.
We have options. So I'm very comfortable playing the right, and she likes the left. So we do have some options there, and I do think that we have a solid singles team as well. Hunter, very good at singles. Oh, yeah. Vivian, even though she doesn't play anymore, very good.
Yep.
Maggie, and then I would say I'm probably around average in the field, even though I don't play anymore. I can slap
forehand winners.
I can slap some forehand winners. So, you know, I definitely don't think we're the best singles team out there, but I think I would say we're above average singles team.
I would agree.
So,
I don't know if you're favored against BLQK.
No, that might be one I would put ahead of us there in those rankings, as they are a very, very tough singles. It's got to be number one or number two in the field. So
I think it's got to be number one.
Yeah, very excited for that first round matchup. And let's hope that we come out hot, letting it fly, and they come out a little flat. And that would go a long way to helping us with that victory.
Yep. And then BLQK later in the day is taking on the Lions, which is Etta Wright, mm-hmm. Olivia McMillan, Thomas Wilson, Chuck Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Which on paper is probably one of the weaker teams in the pool.
I would say so. Yeah. I like Etta.
Yep.
I like Etta. I like what I've seen from her. I think she's pretty solid out there. And of course, Olivia, you know, I like little people.
Yep.
She's scrappy. She's super fiery.
Yep.
Thomas Wilson has all that upside. But I do think that Chuck has dipped a little bit in some of his results. I haven't seen a lot of the matches. Had some really handful of really solid tournaments about 6 months ago, and I think a couple of the results have dipped. We'll see what Chuck has for us in store this weekend, but he definitely has the ability and the firepower to play well.
Totally.
So, there's, like you said, you can't count anyone out.
And there's not, with the rally scoring, one game to 21, anything can happen.
Oh,
so
sure.
it's like a lot of this gets thrown out the window.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah,
really?
So original format, let's say it's a 70-30 on Duper.
Yeah.
It's got to squeeze down.
It does.
Given the format. So
agreed.
So definitely, I would agree with you. Probably one of the weaker teams on paper, and I think that we are probably one of the weaker teams on paper as well. But hey, let's go, man.
The other team in your pool is the Florida Smash. So you have Michelle Esquivel, mm-hmm. Lacey Schneeman, which is a new pickup, J Dub, and Rettenmeier. So also a tough team. Like, they're going to be good.
Yeah, definitely. And Schneeman, lots of talent. Definitely some inconsistencies and some stuff that I've seen, but obviously that's gonna happen when you're so new.
For sure.
So she jumped in with the team as an alternate last year, let it fly and played great. I believe it was against you guys actually.
Yeah, she lit me up head on. She did.
Yeah. So we'll see if she can carry that over, or maybe, you know, just kind of the, oh, I'm on the team. Maybe she gets a little tense or a little tight. Just knowing that, we'll just have to see. But she definitely has a lot of talent, and
she does.
She can play.
So next pool, we've got early round matchup of the Ranchers playing the Chimeras, and so we have on the Ranchers, we have, like we mentioned, Jackie Kawamoto, Anna mm-hmm. Bright, DJ Young, James Ignatowicz, defending champs. Got to think they're going to come out of this pool on top, definitely in top two spots. But they're playing the Chimeras, which is Andrea Coop, Megan Fudge, Gabe Tardio, Daniel De La Rosa.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so all right. So first off, I do believe that, I hope he's good to go, but I do believe that DJ Young pulled out of the PPA Vegas tournament this weekend.
Got for injury.
I think it might have been his wrist.
Okay.
Maybe trickled down through the grapevine. I have not spoken to him, so I'm not positive on that. But I do know that he was scheduled to play that and did not. So we'll have to see how that all shakes out. But man, that team that's a lot of firepower.
It's a lot of firepower
and one Kawamoto rock. So great team construction there. I think it matches up well for them in the in the indoor play. I think Megan Fudge has been playing a lot better lately.
Yeah, she seems to be on the rise.
Yeah, she seems to be on the rise. Really solid, kind of. You know, it's not just the soft game that takes a little while. It's a lot of it's the decision making. So I think that
and that just takes reps.
Yeah, it's just reps. It's court time. It's court time. What it takes. Some people get it a little quicker than others, but you got to be on the court and you got to have court time.
Yeah.
And she's been getting a lot of that lately. And I think it's you can see that in some of her results as well.
Yeah, I think Coop Fudge is very formidable. That's not a gimme against for Jackie and Anna. That's not a gimme against Coop and Fudge.
Definitely, that's a battle. Yeah, I agree completely. And then you have Gabe Tardio, who
tons of upside,
loves to flip, loves to start the fire, takes those big cuts, and you know when he's catching it clean, he's tough. So,
especially in this format.
Yeah, right.
You catch fire a little bit. You go on a 4 or 5 point streak and off to the races.
Yeah, for sure.
And especially with De La Rosa, too.
Yeah, right. It's the same thing. We saw him on Tuesday Night Pickleball last night, and yeah, he might do something weird every now and then and might make an error here and there, but so some of those hands and some of those shots. And
talking about indoor pickleball,
yeah,
the fast game. They can both drive really well. They can both crash, shake, and bake. They'll be tough indoors.
For sure. Ball comes off De La Rosa's paddle pretty special when he hits it well. So, I think they have the they can speak Espanol. They got a little edge there, a little comfort level to speak a little Spanish, just get on the same page, get that vibe going. I think that's definitely something that matters a little bit. So
and then outside of the Khmers, you have also the Ranchers playing the Bus later in the day, which the Bus is Lauren Stratman, Susanna Barr, Eric Lang, Wes Burrows. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a tough team.
Yeah.
That's going to be a tough bracket, actually.
Yeah, no weak links there.
Yeah, so, and then you have the last team rounding out this pool is the Mad Drops, which is Lee Whitwell, Mary Brasha, AJ Kohler, and Julian Arnold.
Right,
you know,
that's the...
We're talking top-tier men's team.
Uh-huh.
Not as strong on the female side, but really, really tough on the men's side.
Absolutely.
And both great mixed players. So
yes, right,
I think
right.
They might struggle to take some of those women's gender matches, but going to be very, very strong in men's, going to be very strong in mixed. And we'll see if what we talked about before is usually mixed is dependent on how well your female plays.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in here, we have two really, really strong mixed players and maybe not as strong on the female side. So it's, I think we talked about will the guys be able to do enough to overcome that, or will they start overplaying? And you know, mix is a tough balance. We always talk about it, that line of being aggressive but not overly aggressive, and overplaying and getting out of position is a very tough line to toe.
Uh-huh.
So it's just gonna, I think that's the big question mark for me is how, like, are they able to be successful in mixed? I think their whole pool play is dependent on that.
I agree completely. And we have AJ has played with Lee several times.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that they will stick together.
Not Mary Brasha. He'll probably play with Mary.
You think? Oh, and he has played with Mary as well. That's right. They played together last. So he's played with both. So yeah, we'll see where they go with there. But I do agree that, and the thing is like AJ is one of the best crab walkers. He can take a lot of court, and Julian's pretty small, but one of the best movers out there. So he can take the court as well. So I think mixed, if they get good chemistry on their two mixed teams, that can be a very, very tough
team. Super dangerous.
Yeah, we're not. It's not like Lee and Mary can't win.
No, they absolutely can.
They're just a little bit lower, I think, on paper than some of those other women's teams.
Yeah, we're talking Lee and Mary versus Jackie and Anna.
Yeah, that's like on paper, that's rough.
Yeah,
that's rough.
Same,
right.
Yeah. And same with, same with Stratman and Barr. You got to favor them over Lee and Mary as well.
Yeah, definitely. But it's an interesting dynamic. And I think we talked about that after the trade happened, that it's two studly guys, and we'll see how that works. So,
because we've seen the two number one females with the Ranchers, what that does.
Exactly. So it's just another, I think this is the most extreme version that we've seen of it with the really, really high end guys and then the solid girls. And we'll see how that team chemistry plays out.
Absolutely. Final pool, we've got the Hard Eights versus Clean. Early in the day.
Okay.
So Hard Eights is Georgia Johnson, Sierra Gayton Leach, Andre Diescu, Kyle Yates going against Team Clean, which is Maggie Remenzi, Regina Goldberg, Dekel, Barr, and Federico Stackrude.
And Federico Stackrude, gotcha.
Which, that'll be an interesting team, right? Because, you know, we saw Fed play with James at the PPA Vegas, and he seems pretty comfortable on the right.
Mm-hmm.
Made some random errors here and there, as one does coming into the men's game.
Yeah.
But I'll be really curious to see how they do in men's. I have a feeling Dekel's going to try to be taking 80% of the court.
I would think so.
But on the women's side, probably two number two females, right? Definitely. So it's going to be tough on that end.
Definitely. And I do believe that Maggie Remenzi, that she's on that team,
yep.
right? Maggie Remenzi,
yep.
I think that she didn't play her best pickleball this past weekend in Alabama.
Yep.
So hopefully she can put that in the rearview mirror and stay focused this weekend, because, you know, everyone has bad tournaments here and there. So,
totally.
So yes, I agree with you completely at that with Regina and Maggie. And it'll be real interesting the dynamic between Dekel and Fed. And I do think it will be lots of Dekel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was the other team? The Hard Eight. So
Georgia, Sierra Gate and Leash, Andre and Kyle, which,
right.
That's a tough men's team.
That's a real that's a really solid team, and obviously it's very easy to pick out the person who is less established of those four in
yep.
Sierra Gaitan Leach. And if she plays well, which I do think that she can, I think that could be a very tough team, because Andre and Kyle comfortable with each other,
oh, yeah.
and fit together nicely.
Yep, absolutely.
Because I mean,
Kyle on the right, Andre on the left.
I mean, I just think Kyle's better on the right.
I agree.
And I think he's legitimately very good on the right. So with that matchup there, Andre playing some better mixed as well, and then you could all, and of course Georgia can always get hot. Watch out.
Yeah.
Watch out if Sierra plays even reasonably.
I think Sierra's underrated. I think
she's got a good game.
I remember when I played her really early on, and she hadn't played much. I was doing my typical mixed, like flip straight on,
mm-hmm.
and most people aren't on it the first time I play them. At least a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And she handled everything. I was getting so mad. I was like, how are you on all of this stuff?
Right.
Like
right.
her hands are good.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, we'll have random errors here and there, but like she's a good player. She's
mm-hmm.
a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad she got picked up, because she deserves to be playing, in my opinion.
Well, there you go. There you go.
So we have that. We have also ATX pickleballers in this group, and we don't, let's see. Yep. ATX Pickleballers 5 is my team. So my team is Simone, Lena, myself, Ben Newell,
mm-hmm.
who is a new pickup for us. We thought Ben fit pretty well in terms of being a lefty. Lena is very comfortable on the left side,
mm-hmm.
in mix, especially, not so much on the right. So that was a big deal and a big reason we wanted to get a lefty. I think, you
yep.
know, she played with Pablo,
uh-huh.
and they did very, very well, didn't lose a match.
Oh, yeah, it was
so
crazy.
So she likes being on that left and mixed.
Yeah, and let's just make sure she doesn't hit Simone's hand with her paddle. Like, where
I
was that, Chicago?
Yeah,
I think it was
that.
In Chicago, and it was, yeah, it was an issue. She whacked,
yeah.
she whacked her pretty good. But I think Ben Newell with the indoor, because he filled in
yep.
for me. And when I hurt my calf,
yep.
he filled in for the
in
mad
Austin.
Drops in Austin, right,
yep.
at Dreamland.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, I thought he did fine. And that is his style.
Yep.
He's I wouldn't say he's uncomfortable dinking, but
shake and bake.
He wants to fire
yep.
away. He wants to put that pressure. Great mover.
Oh, yeah.
Really great mover.
Yep.
Some fantastic footwork, even though, you know, he's not a very big guy.
Yep.
So I think it could be fine. And what was the other team? Sorry.
And ATX Pickleballers,
okay,
which
yeah.
is Jade Kawamoto, Sarah Ansberry, Baby Dill, and Pablo Tejas.
Okay. Now, it's probably a similar, the male version of Maggie Remenzi. I don't think Pablo had his best tournament in Alabama this
yeah.
past weekend,
yep.
but he was on fire at that first MLP.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
he played unreal.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yep.
Just winner, winner, winner.
And he was
speed it up, clean it up.
They were beating people. Like, rally scoring's meant to be tight the whole way through. I mean, they were beating people 21-8, 21-10.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was, like, not even very competitive mixed matches.
For sure, for
like,
sure.
So when he's on, and
whew,
he's
indoor.
Swinging away and comfortable and moving, he's good.
Indoor.
Yeah. Indoor, like, it's going to – I think that's the biggest variable this weekend is the indoor versus
for
outdoor
sure.
in the past. Like, it's going to be different pickleball. It's going to be fast pickleball.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It'll be fun to watch if you're a viewer.
Yeah, I agree completely.
So, last team here is that we haven't talked about is we have the Clean Hard Eights. Did we talk about the Hard Eights?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, we did ATX. That's it.
That's it?
That's it. Oh. And that's pool play. And so the only team that we don't play is the Hard Eights on that first day. So we'll have the Hard Eights on Saturday.
Okay, gotcha. So it's two rounds.
So you play
on Friday.
Two rounds on Friday. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you'll play two of the teams in your pool. You'll play the third Saturday morning. And they've changed the scheduling a little bit to where you have two on Friday. I think we play at 1:30 p.m. and then 7 p.m., okay. which I like the later start.
Okay.
Especially adjusting from Hawaii time.
Yeah, right.
and then you have one Saturday morning. And then I think you mentioned the rest of the day, Saturday afternoon is clear.
I believe that's correct,
and
yes.
And then Sunday morning, you'll have the quarterfinals.
Uh-huh.
And then you'll go to the semifinals. And finals are kind of pretty close back-to-back Sunday evening, mm-hmm. which I like that format because you'll have everybody there watching the semis. You'll have your two winning teams prepare to play in the next hour after that. But you have a great environment for the semis and finals with everybody there. Everybody, the anticipation, the tension building around that. Like, I think that's going to be a really, really special time that Sunday evening where you have the semis and then the finals. That's cool. I like how they did that.
Yeah, I like the no big gap.
Yeah.
The big gap, it's, you know, just like, oh, are we going to stay? Are we going to go?
We're
casual viewers. Are we going to stay? Are we going to go? We'll go. But if it's boom, boom, yeah, you're going to stay. The vibe, the energy will be there. It won't it won't dip and have to come back. Yeah. It'll just continue.
I think it'll make the semis more exciting because everybody's going to be there for
right,
it.
Right, right.
Whereas
exactly.
in the semis, we were in the semis in Newport, and it wasn't very crowded, actually.
Right.
It wasn't like there wasn't a big crowd because right. it was morning.
Uh-huh.
And then, right, there's that big gap in the middle of the day where, you know, people had to come back for the finals at night. Mm-hmm. So I really like that format and how they did that scheduling. So well done, MLP. So that's MLP this upcoming weekend. It's going to be really cool to see. This is the final MLP with these teams as we know them. Everything after this weekend starts anew. We'll have four new owners come mm-hmm. in, four new teams, expanding the league from 12 teams to 16 teams. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a completely new redraft at the end of this year, which will determine all the teams for next year. It's going to be 32 men, 32 women, and it's going to be a lot of fun next year.
Yeah, six spot. I mean, what, one stop, three stops, and now six stops next year.
Yep.
So growing with teams, growing with amount of tournaments and growing with the pro player pool as well.
And so growing with the team owners and their influence. Like this is a rocket ship.
I like MLP.
I like MLP too. and from a player's perspective, man, comparing MLP to playing a PPA or playing an APP, like there's no other place where I feel like I'm actually being treated like a pro athlete.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's for sure. And as being injured and commentating that first one this year, I brought this up a couple times. You could just see the tension. Like, you could see players are taking deep breaths before they return.
Yeah.
Like, it is intense. It's different than that kind of more drawn out regular tournament. It's intense. It's team format. Every point is bigger than that regular format, and you can see it on the players' faces, and you can see that tension, and that it's palpable, and it's very cool.
It is. You're playing for real money in this tournament.
Yeah.
Which also tensions run a little higher.
Mm-hmm.
Tensions run higher. A little bit more drama, as we saw at MLP Newport. Like,
people like money.
People like money, and Adam, when money's involved in games.
Oh man.
People are good at things.
They're good at things. They're very good at things. Yes, people are.
So we are going to start start throwing in more guest episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully this weekend we're able to grab a couple. I know we want to talk to Yana,
mm-hmm.
Get her take on the whole Karen Water situation. And then I got a little list here. We want to get Dylan Frazier on this podcast. Some guys that we know really well that we find funny and entertaining, mm-hmm. that it doesn't always come across to the casual viewer, you
sure.
know what I mean? So
sure.
I think we'll do a really good job at like pulling personality of these guys,
yes.
which normally doesn't come out, or you're not able to see it or get to know that person or that player.
Right.
And that's going to be a lot of fun with Dylan. We're going to get J-Dub on here. We're going to get Riley Newman, hopefully. I got to talk to him.
Uh-huh.
Matt Wright's already agreed. He's going to be on. We want to get Ignatowicz, I find to be very funny.
Oh yeah. I think Ignatowicz is great from the little bit I've talked to him. So I think he would be very entertaining.
Yeah,
to me.
Agreed. Agreed. Anna Bright, hopefully that she'd be great. And then, as you mentioned before, you know, former junior Wimbledon champ Noah Rubin, who's mm-hmm. who's committed to coming into the game, and you know, the reason he mentioned, you know, leaving pro tennis is size. He's 5'9", mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. he's like, I'm just not big enough for tennis,
right?
But I am for pickleball. But Noah, buddy, size does matter in pickleball.
It certainly does.
Size matters in most things.
In most things. It really does. And I think I saw someone make a post or a message. It obviously matters, but maybe a little bit less
yeah.
than pickleball.
Yeah.
And I think that that's probably fair.
No, I think a lot less,
I think
less,
that's
actually.
Probably fair, yeah.
Yeah. But I think, you know, as we see with most tennis players converting, especially somebody, I think you told me the quote of when Noah was 15, that John McEnroe, because he trained at John
yes.
McEnroe Tennis Academy
Wikipedia
in New
page,
York.
Yeah.
John McEnroe said Noah Rubin is the most talented player he's come across at that age.
Yes, correct.
So we're talking about like world-class skills and ability-wise.
Right, and I don't particularly know this, but yep. Johnny Mac, hell of a serve and volleyer, all-court
yep.
game.
Yep.
I have a feeling if he's made that statement that Rubin just wasn't a Rafa
grinder.
Nadal grinder,
yeah.
a Rafa Nadal grinder 10 feet behind the baseline. He had good feel. He can manipulate the ball. He could do some yep. different things. And that is what I think, obviously, is going to translate better. So,
100%.
Because I can remember plenty of the guys that I coached tennis
yep.
that –
Well, let's talk about the comparison between Noah and a Sam Querrey, who Sam
sure.
said 3 months playing pickleball, he'd be top 10 in the world in mm-hmm. doubles.
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference between like a Sam, which, you know, height's a big deal because you get reach mm-hmm. in pickleball, which mm-hmm. is very important. But oddly enough, most of these big guys don't know how to use it properly.
Right.
You know, it's one of the weirdest things. They're letting balls bounce to the kitchen line,
right.
which is like,
right.
why should you ever let that
yeah,
bounce?
Yeah, seriously.
But they do. So I think if we're looking at Noah versus Sam in terms of who's going to get better results in the same amount of time, call it 6 months, call it a year, I would put my money on Noah.
Mm-hmm.
One, I think he's going to take it more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Sam's had a storied tennis career,
right.
made $14, $15 million on tour,
right.
Got to world number 11. I think Noah got to world number 125, something like that in singles. I think Sam's going to be a little less hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Sam's made some more money in his career than Noah has.
Sure.
Noah seems like he's a worker. He mm-hmm. seems like good work ethic. He's going to take it seriously. And I think that's going to make all the difference.
Right. And if I remember correctly, I have not been watching much tennis. I watched a lot of tennis in my early life, not so much the last decade or so. But yeah. Querrey was a big game guy. Big serve, yeah. rocketed yeah. round strokes, you know, that kind of style. Not that he
not the all-court game.
Yeah,
really,
not
though.
That he, you know, didn't have,
volleys,
you know, hands, whatever.
Yep,
but
yep,
that was more his style,
yep.
if I remember correctly. So, you know, it all translates well. But I do think that touch, feel, all-court game is definitely what you would more want to come from than that. One 135 slap a flat forehand
yeah.
type ability in tennis, which, you know, a lot of people are very good at that in tennis.
Yeah, no, it's a big deal in tennis.
Yeah, so very, very cool. Lots of cool stuff lined up, and
yeah.
I like the idea of getting some guests on.
Yeah.
A little mix of some veterans and some of the new players that were some of the pickleball junkies don't know quite as much about. So
absolutely.
I think things are looking up.
I think it feels right.
It does feel right. And I think it feels right to end probably right here, Robert.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Bye-bye.